Thank you. Be seated.
National Union Fire versus 9th Court of
Sole issue in this mandamus case is whether National Union gave a reasonable explanation for its failure to timely request the entire electronic station time, and whether they gave a reasonable explanation for additional time. Lack of familiarity with rules is a reasonable explanation. And that was the essence of the motion for extension that was filed with the Beaumont Court of Appeals. At the time that the motion for extension was filed with the Beaumont Court of Appeals, National Union said, this was recorded electronically. We know there's a rule in Harris County. We know there's a rule in Dallas County. But there isn't one in Liberty County. What should we do? Will you please enter an order and tell us how to prepare this electronic statement of facts? By the way, we have the certified tapes from the court report, and National Union forwarded those tapes with its motion for extension. 2 days later, the district clerk in the Beaumont Court of, the clerk in the Beaumont Court of Appeals said, we accept those tapes. 2 weeks later, they said, no, we don't. Those are copies. You have 2 more weeks to get the electronic statement back on file. It was then that National Union learned about the existence of the unpublished order for electronic statements of fact in Liberty County. In the motion and in the other papers that were filed in connection with the statement of facts, National Union verified that they had been told that the clerk of the Beaumont Court of Appeals had directly contacted the court reporter in Liberty County and said, there's some confusion. Please send us your original tapes rather than these certified copies of tapes that we already have. But our impression of the rule still is today that those certified copies of tapes were exactly what this order required of National Union to give these copies of tapes. Admittedly, National Union did not know at the time that it asked for an extension from the Beaumont Court of Appeals that part of the electronic statement of fact included a law, and that part of the statement of facts included the exhibits. But it is exactly that misunderstanding of the law that was a reasonable explanation. What National Union was attempting to do was to comply with its requirement to file an electronic statement of facts. In the motion it said, we're transcribing them, tell us what to do, here they are.
Could the Court of Appeals have exercise within its discretion in denying a request the motion for extension of time in the first instance? Since you weren't required to file a statement of facts, but merely the tapes and the log, if you had asked for an extension of time to file a typewritten transcription of the statement of facts, could they have exercised within their discretion in denying that request because you had asked for something that wasn't required?
If National Union represented in its motion that the reason it needed time was to transcribe statement facts, that was a misunderstanding of law. That was in the context of what National Union was representing to the court. It did not understand. It was mistaken about the rule. That is only one aspect of its mistake. If the court,
I understand your position, but my question relates to whether the Court of Appeals would have abused its discretion, in your opinion, if it had denied your initial request on the basis that a transcription of the statement of facts was not required under the rules, but only a file of the tapes themselves and the law.
If the only basis that National Union urged in its motion for extension was that it was aware of electronic procedures, the rules, and that it needed more time, the rule itself on the extension of discretionary in the court would exercise discretion, so we don't want to give an extension for that.
So So that would have been within the court's discretion to deny it because you'd asked for the relief that you believe wasn't required. And so why is it an abuse of discretion to improperly grant the order granting the extension of time if it's not an abuse of discretion to deny it in the first instance?
Because I understood your question would be on the denial in the first instance, that was the only basis given, and that there was no mistake other than existing state law about the requirements of the rules, that it was asking for something, additional time that it did not need any time to do, or that was to be taken care of later in the briefing stage, having appendix to the brief. That's not this case.
Just so we're clear on what we're talking about, if you were unaware of the rule governing electronic recording in Liberty County, and you had merely asked for an extension of time on the basis that you wanted to file a transcription of the statement of facts, the Court of Appeals would have been within its discretion in denying that request.
I think we agree with you there.
So why would it be an abuse of discretion once it was pointed out by your opposing counsel that a transcription was not required by the rules? Would it be an abuse of discretion to improperly grant that order and deny the request?
Because prior to the order withdrawing the statement of fact that the file was under grant, the National Union had already offered a reasonable explanation. That reasonable explanation being its lack of familiarity with the rules as a whole. Having established that, for the Court of Appeals to come back later and then exercise discretion to withdraw the statement of facts if in fact it's abused.
Should the party's reliance on the granting of that motion be a factor to consider?
Yes, it should. The record is complete with confusion not only on the part of the National Union but on the part of the Beaumont Court of Appeals Clerk's Office itself. That reliance, there was at least two occasions on which National Union believed it had complied with the rule and was told there's some confusion, you may not have yet. One, when the certified copies of the tickets were filed, and then the second time when National Union began briefing and was told by the Court of Appeals, hold on, we're still thinking about this, and then later withdrawing the statement of fact.
Counsel, why should this be, assuming everything you said is true, why should we grant extraordinary writ of mandamus?
As a part of the court's supervisory powers over the courts of appeal, there, as I understand, the various provisions of the rules of appellate procedure that provide various filings of briefs and motions and bonds and motions for rehearing have always been treated with this court by the written mandamus for those abuses of discretion rather than going through the useless act of what is tantamount to dismissal, that is, the withdrawal of statement of facts, having the court enter an opinion, hear oral argument on a case in which the statement of facts is absolutely necessary, and then come to this court on an application for writ of error. This
have,
court has
hasn't said, most of the law in this area, though, been made on a direct, on an appeal? Most of it's probably.
I'm sorry?
Hasn't most of the law in this area been made on an appeal?
Well, I don't know that I can agree with it. Most of it is not the cases that we're signing are mandamus cases. The last decision of this court, in not an appellate, but in discovery, in Walker, suggests that when an order is tantamount to dismissal, this court can exercise its original jurisdiction to set that order aside. It's our position that the order in this case was tantamount to dismissal because the statement of facts is necessary.
Walker was talking about trial level.
That's right.
And it is we have the Pat Walker case. There's another Walker case, Pat Walker, which would seem to suggest that if we were taking on mandamus, all this really does is just have the effect of putting you ahead of everybody else in the general appellate.
Well,
in the appellate timetable, so you get their case heard here first.
As I understand the courts, and again, the Walker case is a discovery case, but it's recognizing that on the one hand, the writ of mandamus does not issue just to save time. On the other, orders that are tantamount to dismissal. And again, we are saying that this is an appellate context, that at least one level of appellate review is an important right that this court is saying we will exercise a writ of mandamus in our original jurisdiction to guarantee that parties are heard on the merits and not on technicalities, and that's exactly what this case is. It's an appellee desiring to have the case heard not on the merits and to use the technicality, and this court enjoys its original jurisdiction to set aside those types of orders rather than wait for what will certainly happen, the dismissal or judgment affirmed because there is no statement of fact, and then later take up the matter by direct appeal.
Do you have a point of error in the Court of Appeals relating to the error in the charge?
We have not been able to. The Court of Appeals has suspended the briefing.
I've noticed in your motion for a new trial you allege a charge error.
A charge error.
You don't need a statement of fact for that, do you?
No, we do not.
So you can present that argument at least in the Court of Appeals without a statement of fact.
We would have to present the appeal either piecemeal or twice if we were to come back up to the court and we say, yes, it was an abuse of discretion, it was probably withdrawn statement of fact. Then we would have to go back down and brief what we could not have briefed before, being the factual insufficiency evidence points relating to the admission or exclusion of evidence. And we do have those points, or will have those points in this case.
We would have to overrule Pat Walker for you to prevail, wouldn't we? Page 309, we say denial of a motion to extend time is a matter that may be addressed by this court when properly presented in an application for a error to be denied an mandamus in that case.
I'm going to have to ask for some additional time to find that by way of something, but it is my impression from the cases that this court has original jurisdiction that you can exercise before this time before under these circumstances.
Well, I think the court would appreciate hearing from you in a supplemental letter brief with regard to your position on whether we have to overrule Pat Walker for your client.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
Next, please. Ms. Casey McGann will give the argument for respondent. Chief Justice Phillips, Justices of the Supreme Court. My name is Casey McGann from the law firm of Jensen McGann out of Houston, Texas. And I'm here today representing the real party in interest, Lawrence Smith. Mr. Smith was the appellee in the Court of Appeals, or is the appellee in the Court of Appeals, and was a plaintiff in the trial court level. The respondent is the Ninth Court of Appeals out of Beaumont, Texas. And the relator is National Union Fire Insurance Company in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who is the defendant in the trial court and who is the appellant in the Court of Appeals at the present. For convenience and for ease of listening, I'm going to refer to the real party in interest of Mr. Smith and to National Union, either National Union or the insurance company, and I'll refer to the respondent as the Court of Appeals or the Ninth. A brief summary of the reasons that were here on an original mandate proceeding to this court for the Court of Appeals withdrawal of an earlier order allowing a motion of extension of time to file an electronic statement of facts. The insurance company, National Union, would like this court to command the Court of Appeals to withdraw its withdrawal and in effect allow the electronic statement of facts on appeal based on its earlier filed motion for extension of time. Mr. Smith has two arguments to make here. The first is that mandamus is inappropriate in this case, and the second is that if mandamus be appropriate, that the Court of Appeals did not abuse its discretion in withdrawing its prior order allowing the motion of extension of time to file the statement of facts. Briefly, the trial was recorded electronically in Liberty County pursuant to a Supreme Court order signed July 30, 1991. The trial happened exactly 1 year ago today, May 26, 1992. Mr. Smith received a unanimous jury verdict, which National Union appealed. When it got to the appellate court, they perfected appeal by filing a cost bond on September 14th. They did file their cost bond timely. They did not file their statement of facts pursuant to Rule 4 of this court's order allowing the electronic recording of proceedings in Liberty County. What they did do, though, was that they filed a motion for extension of time on October 14th. A motion for extension of time may be filed under Rule 54C of the Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure within 15 days of the last day for filing the statement of facts on appeal. So in effect, that motion for extension of time was timely filed because it was filed on October 14, 1992. However, Mr. Smith would urge that that motion for extension of time was not a valid motion for extension because it didn't comply with the rules of appellate procedure. Inasmuch that it didn't comply with Rule 54C because it didn't state the reasons for not requesting the statement of facts, rather, from the official court reporter. It didn't comply with Rule 53A of the Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure for that same reason. And because there was never a reasonable explanation given, as that term is understood under Meshwork versus Meshwork, and even Garcia versus Castro-Fuller, and because, finally, the Court of Appeals has absolute discretion in this matter.
We should
absolute?
At all.
May I take Chief Justice?
Take his first.
So we shouldn't be reviewing it at all?
No, sir, I don't believe so. And to answer Justice Cornyn's question about whether or not we would have to overrule Pat Walker, the 1981 decision that issued from this court, I think that we would. Because to quote the Pat Walker decision, there was an adequate and clear remedy at law by virtue of an application for writ of error, which we get before you eventually again, I would imagine. So National Union's argument is probably correct. But as far as overruling the law that issued from this court, I believe we would have to do that because denying or granting a motion for extension of time to file any instrument, whether it be a transcript or a statement of facts, is discretionary. We get into an area under Rule 100. If it's a motion for rehearing, that's different. Because by doing that, if the court was to have denied a motion for rehearing, it would divest this court of its jurisdiction. That's why Rule 100G of the Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure allows this court to review that, if it is a denial.
Denying right to file a statement of facts does a heck of a job.
Well, it does, because it does deprive the appellant of his ability to argue his case.
And there's no review of that.
There is review by application for writ of error.
Well, isn't that kind of a waste of judicial resources?
Yes, you're right. Justice Doggett, I believe it is. But looking at the opinions that have issued from this court...
You think they require us to waste judicial resources?
I believe they do. And, Justice Doggett, you expressed a concern in the other Walker case, which really involved discovery on the mandamus issue. And that was when this court had found that there was a clear abuse of discretion. And your point was, well, why not allow mandamus then, if we've already seen that there was an abuse of discretion? Here, there is no abuse of discretion. Because discretion is mandatory. If you look at the wording of the rule, Rule 54C, an extension of time may be granted for late filing in a court of appeals of the statement of facts if a motion reasonably explaining the need. The if makes that a condition precedent or condition preceded, however you want to pronounce it, to even having the appellate court look at it. The appellate court may, even if there is a reasonable explanation, refuse to grant a motion for extension of time. Mr. Smith...
So even if counsel's car broke down on the way to the clerk's office and failed to file the tapes on time, we can never look at it.
Well, that issue has been looked at, as a matter of fact, in Penn versus 12th Court of Appeals, and that was the reason given. He was given permission by the Chief Justice to arrive 2 hours late, and then his car broke down. I think that equity demands some sort of leniency for a condition like that. If a law firm were to catch fire, if someone were to be on maturity duty...
Now we're arguing about the reason, not about the discretion.
That's correct.
So we can't...
I'm sorry?
So we can't... So Head says we can't...
Well, Head is different. Head, this court actually reviewed that as an application for writ of error, not a mandamus. So it can be reviewed. I think the problem is that word may in the rules, and until the legislature perhaps changes that to the word shall, that if a reasonable explanation is given, the court shall allow that and allow the statement of facts to be filed on time. But right now, the way the case law is, and also the way the actual statute reads, we're kind of hemmed in here. But I do believe that in such a situation, we have to look at what equity would demand, because that's not fair in such a case. Mr. Smith doesn't believe that the explanation provided by National Union was reasonable. First of all, a reasonable explanation has been defined in Meshwork as any plausible statement of circumstances. And plausible, if you look in the dictionary, means believable. The only reason that National Union gave came, first of all, in their reply to my response to their motion for extension of time. So first of all, it came late anyway. And it was not asserted within that original 15-day period required by Rule 64C of the Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure.
You said there's no reason.
I did not see a reason. What I saw was a list of facts, I guess, from which perhaps a reasonable explanation could be inferred or implied.
Do they have to come to the point and say the reason is cause, or can't you tell from reading what the reason is?
Well, I don't think we need to go that far to actually state it out paragraph by paragraph, but the rule does require that a reasonable explanation be provided in the body of the motion for extension of time. Otherwise, any reasonable, no matter how flimsy, could be allowed. But right now we have a rule which shows absolute discretion on the part of the Court of Appeals. And if we look at abuse of discretion standards, National Union would have to prove to you that there was but one decision that could have possibly been made under the law and facts existing at the time. Well, under the law and facts existing at the time, we have an appellant who's filing a statement of facts late. We have rules of procedure which actually show that the discretion involved on the part of the Court of Appeals to allow or deny the filing of a motion of extension for time. It's not fair that the appellant should drag its feet. Meshwork requires it to show that it wasn't deliberate or intentional. And that's a tricky area of the law, because no one is going to admit that they dragged their feet or they didn't do something with the intention that the appeal would be dismissed. I don't think that would ever happen. That's almost like the old common law, where the intent was to actually throw the punch, but the intent was not to throw the punch and cause the injury. I think we have to look at that and separate that. But once again, until the legislature decides to change Rule 54C regarding the extension of time in which to file a statement of facts and transcripts, a rule which gives absolute discretion because of that word may. And they may as well underline and bold that word in the body of the rule itself. Another problem is that National Union never requested the preparation of the statement of facts from the official court reporter in Liberty County. That's also a requirement in Rule 54C of the Appellate Rules of Civil Procedure, which relates back to Rule 53A of those same rules.
Wait a minute, I thought under the Liberty County rule there did not have to be a statement of facts. You're saying it has to be requested, but they don't have to prepare it?
Well, the transcript of the statement of facts need not be prepared, and I think that's the beauty of allowing the electronic statement of facts recording.
So what do you have to request?
You still must request them, though, because I've submitted the affidavit of Nan Bagwell, who is the official court reporter in the case.
You mean text, not transcript?
Yes, just request the statement of facts, whether they be...
Which is the text.
Which is the type.
In this case, it's their tape, their logs, their exhibits. But that must be requested from the official court reporter. In this case, we have an official court reporter, so I guess there's a problem there. However, Justice Heck and Justice Enos, being out of the Dallas area, the Dallas Court of Appeals, you probably were the first judges to actually use firsthand these electronic statement of fact filings. And it was in the Darley versus Udivan decision that Justice Enos, you offered as then Chief Justice of the Dallas Court of Appeals, where you say it doesn't matter if it's an official court reporter, you still have to live up to the rigors and requirements imposed by the Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure and request it from the official court reporter. Nan Bagwell's affidavit, which was submitted several weeks ago as a supplement to Mr. Smith's reply brief, shows that she never received a request to prepare the statement of facts. And I don't know, from that, I guess you could imply that had she received a request and a statement of facts early enough, then perhaps she could have transmitted it to the Court of Appeals in a timely fashion.
How do you deal with Mr. Bye's comment that the order regarding Liberty County is unpublished? How is an attorney supposed to deal with rules that you can't go pull out wax statutes open up and find out what you're supposed to do?
I think that's a problem, and perhaps the court might be able to resolve it with the name. Bell versus Hare was recently heard before the Houston 14th Court of Appeals, and they expressed the same problem that they had with the Supreme Court orders not being published. There's really no place to turn to them. One of the justices, I forget who authored that opinion, suggested that perhaps these orders be published in the Texas Bar Journal, similar to how proposed rules and orders of the Supreme Court are published in the Bar Journal anyway.
How did you find out about this order?
I had a trial in Judge Bristol's court in Harris County in the 234th, which was recorded electronically. And when we have this electronic recording in Liberty County, you can't help but miss. You're told to speak into certain microphones. Every council has their own specific microphone to speak into because it's taped according to who's speaking. You can't help but miss it. I had then asked for a copy of the rules myself, and I actually, and this is in the record, I actually provided National Union with a copy of the transcript that I had already transcribed for myself because I wanted to learn, first of all, what mistakes I might have made, how I might better argue a case, if people could hear me, and secondly, in case they filed a motion for new trial, which they did. So I already had the transcription of the entire trial at the time that they filed their motion for new trial, which was overruled.
You provided that to them on September 10th, 1992, about a month before they filed a motion for extension of time because they could not file a transcription of the statement of facts.
Yes and no, Justice Cornyn. Yes, because yes, we did provide it a month before they filed our original motion to extend time to file the electronic recording. No, because that excuse, that reasonable explanation did not show up until November 13th, 1992, when they filed a reply to Mr. Smith's report to withdraw the order allowing the late filing.
I'm confused about the last half. What happened on November 13th?
On November 13th, National Union, it's either the 13th or the 14th, filed a response to Mr. Smith, filed a reply, rather, to Mr. Smith's response, asking the Court of Appeals to withdraw its order allowing the late statement act. So that didn't even turn up until, I think it was 28 days after the last day of the public
National Union's counsel had been served with a transcription of the statement of facts by you on September 10th or about?
On or about. I attached exhibits to our reply brief.
And they didn't file their motion for extension of time until October 14th.
Yes, I see my friend,
but
may I answer this? Yes, that's correct. they didn't file their motion for extension to file the statement of facts late until that day, October 14th, but by that time they had already had the transcription, which we had gone to them, so they eventually shared in that cost, in their possession for about a month. Chief Justice, may I quickly just conclude?
You will have... your time is up. Are there any questions?
What was your conclusion?
My conclusion was just that Mr. Smith would ask that this court deny mandamus because, first of all, a mandamus is inappropriate in this situation. There is no jurisdiction for the Supreme Court. And secondly, that if mandamus is found to be appropriate in this set of facts, that you affirm the opinion of the Court of Appeals and find that they had improvidently granted the original motion for extension of time and that they did not abuse their discretion in withdrawing that order. Thank you very much for the privilege of hearing your argument.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
The statement of fact that was provided to the transcript was apparently not the entire electronic statement of fact. It was only one part of the statement of fact. It was also the logs and the exhibits. The transcription was provided to us in September. It was not complete.
Well, it was initiated, the preparation of that transcription was initiated by Kathy Horner and her office.
Well, that's right.
By letter of September the 9th.
That's right.
When by which you offered to split the cost.
That's right. And in the motion for extension, in between the statements of National Union, what do we do, was the reference to, can we have 30 days so that the court reporter may transfer the certified to set copy, assuming that, and we were not sure, that the electronic provision of either Harris County or Dallas County applied, because we did not even know the Liberty County provision. We said, additionally, we were filing copies of the trial tape and a certified certification from the Liberty County recorder. We did that for 2 weeks or so. The Beaumont Court of Appeals thought we had complied with the rule. We also said, if the court determines the statement of facts was supposed to have been filed, we would also request an extension relating to the appendix and the written transcription. We would show the court that we have been reviewing such a written transcription of the recorded statement of facts and that the transcription could be filed. What we did say was, it's not complete. There are gaps, and we have people who are trying to determine what the gaps are. But we did have that transcription. We admitted it was that transcript. It was exactly the lack of knowledge about what to do with that transcript, when to file it, is it or is it not the entire statement of facts, that was the mistake of law that National Union was coming up with. National Union admittedly did not say anywhere in this motion, if you read it, by the time you get done, you will come to this conclusion. We don't know about the Liberty County rule. But that's what that entire motion says. We don't know about a rule. We don't know how to comply with this. We are essentially making a mistake of law, and that is, in the case of a reasonable explanation.
You didn't tell the Court of Appeals that you had a transcription in hand, but you had concerns about its completeness in order to verify its completeness.
No, we said we have a transcription in hand. We are working with it, and we will file it with the brief. And that was an assumption on National Union's part that that might be the way that we file this thing. With respect to this affidavit that was filed, I believe, not 2 weeks ago, but last week, by the court recorder. First, I do not know that that's really before the court, because it's nothing that the Court of Appeals has to consider in its decision. So whether the Court of Appeals abused its discretion, which I think is the issue, that was not something that was before them either way. We would certainly like the opportunity, if that is before the court, to respond to it, because we do not think that it is in all respects accurate to our recollection of what we tried to do or were doing to respond with this rule about the electronic statement of facts. But it is undisputed that we did not know about it. That was the reasonable explanation. This court, in the interest of promoting the merits of appeals rather than the technical rules of appeals, has said, if you make a mistake of law, if you don't count the number of days right for the bond, if you don't know when you post the bond in relation to a motion for new trial, those are mistakes that we will accept. The case that you talked about, the 12th Court of Appeals case, that is a mandamus case. That's not a writ of error case. And it was a case where this court exercised its original jurisdiction to bring a case back on the merits when the attorney did not file brief in time because his car broke down. So this court has before exercised its original jurisdiction to see that appeals were taken on the merits and in a faster manner than awaiting the ultimate conclusion that anyone can draw from not having a statement of facts, and that is that they will not win on appeal, they will bring an application for error, which the court may or may not take. The counsel said, was talking about the beauty of the unpublished order. There is no beauty to it whatsoever. It is an unpublished order. It is a trap, TRAP, Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure trap. It is a 15 short day rather than 30 days. It does not run from the date of judgment. It runs from the date you file the appeal bond. If you file the appeal bond sooner, you have less days to get these certified copies of the tapes.
Anywhere in your affidavits about the attempts you made to find out whether there was an order from this court allowing You knew that this trial was being reported.
Absolutely.
Rather than reported.
Absolutely. And the motion for extension.
Does the record reflect your efforts to inquire or from any official in Liberty County about the procedures or any order we have undertaken?
It does not, Your Honor, and that's really what I was referring to in the particular affidavit that was filed last week from the court recorder of Liberty County. Since that came in, as the court knows, I was here yesterday arguing a different case. Co-counsel had brought to me a memorandum from our file that suggests that Kathy Horner from our office was attempting to determine what we were to do. And in fact, there was some question about who certifies the transcription when it's not prepared by the official recorder. As we all know now, unfortunately, no one does. The attorneys just attach it to their brief. We were on the wrong track, but yes, we were trying. We would be glad to provide the court. If the court's going to consider the affidavit from Nan Bagwell filed last week, we'd be happy to provide the court an affidavit about those efforts as well.
I suppose you can provide that. I'm not saying that we'll consider either one of those. Just don't want to make a judgment for the whole court. But I'm interested from a personal standpoint in whether or not our orders are available upon diligent inquiry.
Have you since located a location where that order is filed?
We eventually got a copy of the order. I believe it was attached to their motion early in July. That's where we got the copy in this case.
Do you know whether it's on file with the district court?
I do not know. In fact, we were discussing that very subject this morning on what responsibility either the district or county court takes in either posting it in a public place or publishing it. I think it's some of the...
latest point, can't you just ask the district court for a copy? Did anybody try that?
Well, I think our motion speaks to the fact that no one did at the time of this file.
Did you say, Judge, could I have a copy of the order? I mean,
if you know that there is an unpublished order out there and know that...
Well, you know if they're having a recording, they're either doing it illegally or... the pilot project of our court.
Sure, there's no dispute that it was, I don't know, I'd agree with the latter. Whether it was a project of this court, whether it was an order entered by this court, we certainly knew it was being tape recorded. We knew enough to get the tapes. Our problem was what do we do with them? And, of course, critical to this appeal is not really what you do with them, but when do you file them? If I walk into a courtroom, I see a microphone and I know it's being recorded, I do not necessarily know that my time to perfect the appeal has to come out. That does not necessarily follow from the conclusion that the transcript is going to be tape recorded, that the statement of facts will be tape recorded, rather than given to me by the court reporter. Certainly in this case, it is the 15-day. The record shows that when we found out, when the clerk's office called and said, we think you might have had to file this in 15 days, we said, that can't be right. We think we have 30 days. If we're wrong, though, please give us an extension. We didn't know about that. And we do not know what to do. Please tell us what to do. If we are going to try to have appeals heard on the merits, that is a reasonable explanation. I guess the statements in some of the Dallas Court of Appeals cases are correct in that there is no requirement of a showing of lack of material harm, unlike the briefing requirement. If you ask for an extension of time to file your brief, you talk about material harm. Perhaps you don't do that in context, but there was certainly none here. We're talking about weeks, not months. I think Justice Brookshire's dissent points all of that out.
Any questions? Thank you. That concludes the argument, and the second public court will take another decision.